Hello and welcome to The Stack, our first show of 2021. And on this week's show, we'll play you some of the Stack highlights from last year. In fact, I've only chosen the interviews with editors of brand new publications. Even in a very challenging year, there's been plenty of new print. I hope you enjoy the show. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. First of all, I wish everyone a very happy new year, and I hope you've enjoyed The Stack last year. We see plenty of new magazines arriving in the newsstand in, you know, what is definitely a very challenging year for everyone. So this show is a bit of the best of the interviews I had this year with many editors. We have, of course, Monocle's new title, Confect, A Thing of Beauty, The Return of Playgirl, and also the Modern House magazine. We start with our very own Sophie Grove telling us a bit more about Monocle's new title, Confect.
Confect means confectionery, simply, in German. So, I mean, Marcella Palek, our style director, she puts it really well. It's like a kind of treat, a box of sort of wonderful bonbons that you might sort of dip into and eat over the course of, you know, a week or a month curled up on the sofa. That's how we see confect. But interestingly, confection is also ready to wear in German. So we're sort of playing on that fashion connotation as well. And I think the title has to be taken really as a sort of concept as well. It's the sweet things in life, but also, we love the shape of the word. It's just a very strong architecture on the page, and we feel, you know, we're really drawn to the shape of the brand, as it were.
That's amazing. And one interesting thing as well, that the magazine, of course, is very much focused, not only, I would have to say, in Central Europe. There's even some text in German, which, you know, I find quite amazing. Is that a kind of very strong market you are aiming for women in this area? Not only in this area, I would say, but there's quite a strong presence from Central Europe, right?
Absolutely. I mean, our anchor is really Central Europe. We talk about this sort of golden triangle between Zurich, Vienna and Berlin, but it's that region and it's that sort of old world heritage, craft, but also the women and men who live there, that sort of understated elegance, that sort of Jill Sander-esque sense of style, very rooted and sort of quite well developed. And luxury, absolutely. I mean, the magazine is filled with beautiful, beautiful clothes and design and places to be, but it's inspired by the sort of egalitarian luxury of that part of the world, where you might have a dip in a kind of Lido or a lake, you know, and then head off to the office. There is a sense that kind of Middle Europa, I mean, it's a term kind of used culturally, is very much our inspiration.
Well, to be honest, when I was reading Confect, you know, I could imagine myself in a Lido and then having kind of a nice cocktail or a nice gin after, you know. And I know you love your Lidos. In fact, when you were discussing with Tyler, you know, we need to launch a new title. You're basically in a Lido. I think it was quite inspiring for you guys as well.
Well, yeah, Confect has been in the pipeline, as it were, for years, because we've always talked about doing a sister title to Monocle and what might she sound like and look like. But then really we sort of kicked off the conversation in late summer, and I was in Zurich with Tyler Brulé, Monocle's founder, and then also Marcella Palek, who's the style director and very much involved in just plotting the first issue. And we were all, you know, swimming around in Lake Zurich, lying on a bathing raft, just discussing what the magazine might look like. And we spent, I mean, days really just in meetings. Well, you can call them meetings, but they were sort of lunches and sort of sitting on grassy banks, sipping drinks, and then just chatting. Yeah. Well, I suppose the philosophy is there, and we're sort of drawn by that. And, you know, there's some amazing women in Zurich and Germany who I've got to know commissioning them, but also talking to them. And, you know, the people who've contributed to the magazine are very much our readers, but also our guides in a way. And we have a wonderful contributing editor called Tina Kandrian, who's in Zurich. And they've just been amazing steer, but they're also just people who live this life. And I mean, Confect is not exclusively for them, and we want it to be it's a pan-European project, but it's very much international, and you can see that just glancing down the contents. You can see we're in Egypt, we're in Bangkok, we're in Portugal briefly, but really Central Europe is our kind of heartland.
And tell us, I mean, our listeners would like to know that, what's the plan? Is it going to be a quarterly title then, Confect?
It is, yeah. We're already working on the second issue. So we've had a kind of couple of days to take stock. But, you know, spring comes round pretty fast. And the quarterly metabolism is great for Confect. And it gives us time to really investigate our stories and report them at leisure and write them sort of long form. We want our readers to really soak up these stories. They're pure escapism in some senses. And rather than doing, you know, four vineyards, we'll spend a few days with just one winemaker and really, really get the best out of these stories.
That was Sophie Grove, editor of the recently launched Confect, a new title from the Monaco staple. You can buy a copy of it on monaco.com or in the best newsstands around the world. In 2020, we also saw an exciting new launch. Playgirl magazine is back. The iconic title that was founded in the 70s as a counterpart to Playboy had many iterations and is back now as a yearly publication. The beautiful first issue features actress Chloe Sevigny 9 months pregnant on the cover, and it's a return to the feminist and provocative ways of the 70s editions. I spoke to Playgirl magazine editor-in-chief Sky Parrott.
So the magazine originally launched in 1973, and it was conceived of as a feminist counterpart to Playboy of the 70s. So it was very smart, very political, very high level of contributors. Gloria Steinem was originally a contributor. Maya Angelou, Joyce Carol Oates, Robert Mapplethorpe shot for it. So it had this very political and feminist bent, but it also featured male nudity. So it was very provocative in that way and really wonderful. We archived the whole archives of the magazine, and we have them digitized, and it's been amazing exploring them. So from 73 to 76, it was this very dynamic feminist publication. And in 76, it was sold, and it continued along those lines, but a bit lighter, sort of a Cosmo, but with naked guys. So the content wasn't quite as hard-hitting. The journalism wasn't as in-depth. And then it was sold again, and it devolved over the years into its final incarnation, which was really a gay porn mag. And that's what I knew it as, and that's what I think a lot of people, as I've approached them for to be part of it, have known it as. And it stopped publishing. Our publisher now is a young guy from a publishing family, and the opportunity to buy it fell into his lap, and he grabbed it. But he didn't have any experience producing a magazine, and so we were introduced by a mutual friend who got us together, and I had previously published a magazine called Dossier that he was familiar with, and I started working with him a little while after he bought it on the concept and then putting the team together, and now as editor-in-chief on the first issue.
And Sky, it's so interesting. I mean, there are quite a few examples, even here on the stack, of magazines coming back to life in different forms, in different ways. For example, we had The Face recently. That just proves the power of magazines, right? I mean, they're clearly not dead. I mean, there's still space even for those iconic brands such as Playgirl.
Yeah, so going into that first meeting, I have to say, our friend who introduced us at first didn't tell me what the magazine was. And when he did tell me, I was incredibly enthusiastic. And I went into that meeting with this idea that this magazine really should exist as kind of a feminist counterpart to Playboy of the 70s. And I went into the meeting very excited about that. And the publisher was like, yeah, but that's what it was originally. And I want it to be that again. So it was... It feels, with, you know, speaking to Playgirl in particular, like a very timely moment to bring it back. But I think there's a certain nostalgia attached to magazines in general. They're definitely an incredible force for building community and for connection. And I think there's something, as the world has become so digital, that really resonates about holding something physical. And I've thought about that a lot as we've been putting this together.
And which incarnation of Playgirl do you want to use it? I have a feeling perhaps a little bit of the 70s or some of the cheekiness of the 80s. What can you tell us about it? Because, of course, I know the magazine will be out quite soon.
So what we've been using as a template is that original 70s idea of something that's quite smart, quite political, unapologetically feminist, but also does, because it's Playgirl and it has a certain DNA of it related to nudity, of course, that's an issue that we have to look at with it as well. And so we've taken all those original ideas and tried to funnel them through a modern lens. So looking at questions of gender, looking at questions of representation, looking at the politics of all of those things, looking at the politics of the body, and really thinking about what constitutes a feminist and a feminine publication today. So that's been a really interesting exercise for the team. It's been very very fun and challenging and also exciting, because I don't see there being another magazine or publication that occupies this particular space in the market, whether it's in print or digital. It really feels like a space that should be occupied, and the opportunity to look at what kind of content answers those questions has been a very exciting one.
And tell us, in terms of the format, will it be a biannual, or I mean, are you trying to make it a kind of a more premium product? Tell us a bit more.
So right now it's being launched as a biannual. It's an independent magazine. Doing a monthly is not economically possible for an independent magazine. So we've conceived of it as a biannual. The format is going to be quite small. We really thought that it should be intimate, given that we're dealing with questions of the body and nudity. I couldn't imagine doing a large format magazine that you would open up on the subway and have giant pictures. So the size is close to the size of a Partimento. It's going to be quite small. Something that you could put into your purse and carry with you was our feeling around what it should look like. It's broken up into sections. So the front of the book section is a series of first-person essays, and those deal with questions of human experience, not specific to female experience, but really human experience. And to backtrack a little bit, in thinking about what Playgirl should be and who our audience would be, we've kind of tried to toggle away from the idea of a magazine for women and more thought of it as a magazine that presents the world with a feminine point of view. So for me, what that means is that we'd like to create something that has plenty of space for anyone who's interested in joining that point of view of the world. But this is, rather than content for, you know, feminist content or content for women, this is feminine content. And so we've thought about it that way. So the front of the book, as I said, is this series of first-person essays, and they really are about a lot of different things. I mean, there's one about raising a single mother raising a child with her family, kind of filling in the role of her partner. And there's another from the jewelry designer Pamela Love about sort of her external life not matching her internal life at the height of her business's success. And there's another one from the writer Carvel Wallace about how traditional masculinity constrains men and what a small box that is for men to have to fit in. So it's really a kind of variety of human experience. Ruth Reichel, the former editor-in-chief of Gourmet, wrote a beautiful essay about traveling with her women friends as they've aged together. So it's really varied, but really beautiful first-person essays, and those are all illustrated. And then we have the large portfolio in the magazine, which is a multimedia portfolio that explores the question of desire. So we've asked different artists and creatives to contribute pieces that look at that question. You know, that was a really interesting one, because we wanted to, you know, we've referenced back a lot to the original DNA of the magazine, but I had a feeling when we sent that question out, what we got back would be very different than just straight up content about sex. And it really hasn't, it's been very little about sex. Most people's desires relate to having climate change dealt with or living in a world that's not a disaster. And so we've gotten back a lot of answers like that. We did a wonderful portfolio that's really the heart of the issue that looks at feminist heroes. So it's women who have devoted their time and their energies to lifting up other women through their work. And so that's, we've included Alicia Garza, who's one of the co-founders of Black Lives Matter, and Sarah Sophie Flicker, who's one of the organizers from the Women's March, and Amanda Decadene, who founded Girl Gaze, and a woman named Ai-Jen Poo, who's the co-founder of the National Domestic Workers Alliance. So really a variety of women who are doing incredible work in activism and using their energies for good. And we've thought about that thread a lot, the idea of what constitutes kind of female power and how female power can be utilized in the world for good. And we do have a centerfold in the issue.
I was going to ask that.
Yeah,
because a lot of people have been asking me when I say, oh, you know, Playgirl is back. And they yeah. I think some people have this image in their head of, like, I don't know, Tone Selleck. Was he in there?
He wasn't actually in Playgirl.
He wasn't.
So that was in,
sorry.
No, everyone thinks it. I thought it too.
Yeah.
I believe it was actually in Cosmo,
okay.
That one.
Okay.
But, yeah, so we did. I think the magazine is so closely associated with the idea of a centerfold that we really had to address that. But the way we've done it is we have a portfolio shot by the photographer Harley Weir, where she's looked at different male bodies. And
she's excellent.
She's so good.
Yeah.
And the portfolio is really beautiful. Although we do have an actual centerfold that folds out, and it's really funny and provocative and great. So, I mean, the centerfold was something I wasn't sure of as we went into it, but our creative director was quite sure that he wanted to include it, and so was our publisher. And so I think the way that we've finally done so is really funny and sexy and good. So.
I'm very excited about that as well. Because, you know, let's be honest, the magazine used to have quite a big gay readership as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's also perhaps one of the people that might like to buy that.
Well, so what's interesting actually is in reaching out to contributors and editors, gay men have been one of the most enthusiastic audiences. And I don't know, the whole magazine actually opens with, it's a first-person essay that explores the history of Playgirl. And it's kind of a macro and a micro look at it, because the writer, T. Cole Rachel, talks about his experiences with Playgirl growing up as a queer kid in Oklahoma, where he would find it and, like, surreptitiously look at it, but then also looking at the greater cultural context of it. And it's a really wonderful essay. And I think I've loved the enthusiasm men have to contribute to it. And one interesting thing, though, the Desire portfolio that I mentioned, that's one space that we have not found a lot. We did not find a lot of guys willing to approach that subject. So it's been an interesting exercise to kind of see where, you know, where there are differences and what people of different genders and persuasions want to, you know, want to see and want to engage on.
That was Sky Parrott from Playgirl magazine. The first issue is out now. Also on the show today, we have the co-founder of The Modern House, Matt Gibbard. They sell the most impressive modernist properties there is. Who didn't spend hours on their website dreaming of the perfect home? And now for print lovers, exciting news. They also have a print title now called Modern House and is out now. I spoke with Matt about what can we expect from the title and why it made sense to go for print.
The magazine is a natural extension of all of the other content that we do. I mean, we have, of course, our online journal, which is in effect a magazine in itself, and we do video content, and we have a podcast, of course, but there is no substitute, I don't think, as I'm sure you'll agree, for the tactility of, and the tangible nature of a natural magazine. And I started my career in magazines. I worked at the World of Interiors from the age of 21. And Albert, my business partner, also did the rounds in design journalism as well. He worked at Wallpaper and The Guardian and various other places as well. So I think for both of us, and indeed for a lot of our staff, doing a magazine is such a natural extension to what we're already doing. It just felt like finally it was the time to do it.
And Matt, what is the format of the title? From what I can see, it's going to be a biannual. But will you sell on your website, or will you give it away to some of your buyers, or how is it going to work?
So the first issue, like anything, is an experiment in a way. So what we've done initially is decide to sell it directly through our own channel. So you can buy it on our website. We've got a new shop function, which is just a small, you know, shoppable element of the website. And we've also sent one or two copies to, you know, to people well known in our network. But really, initially, the first one is just about seeing what the take up is, seeing what the appetite is. Can we make it work for us? And does it successfully continue that message that we want to put out? And it's really for us all about a continuation of that idea that good design does add genuine value to your life and to your well-being. And I think that this magazine is another strand to that narrative. If people like it, and if we end up selling a few copies, I think we will then expand it from there. And hopefully you might see it in, you know, certain bookshops, museum shops, things like that as well. So we'll see where it goes.
And Matt, I mean, you mentioned there if there would be an appetite. I mean, I think I can tell you that there's quite a lot of appetite for the modern house. There's something that about the brand that, you know, people are connecting with. I mean, were you surprised? I mean, of course, I think you launched the modern house. Was it 2005? Correct me if I'm wrong. But, you know, it's getting more and more popular. What do you think? Do you think people are caring more where they live? They want to live like somewhere pleasant. And you know, when you go to your website, you know, every house is in a way special, right?
It's interesting because the process of putting together a magazine is about being an editor. And I think that we, Albert and I, have been editors since the beginning of the Modern House because, of course, we're making editorial decisions all the time about what houses we take on to sell. And that then expanded into, well, which people in our community living in an interesting way do we want to celebrate on our journal? And then the magazine, again, is another editorial decision. I think people like the modern house because I think it takes them away from their everyday. It gives them an opportunity to dream a little bit about a different life. I think they get lots of inspiration for how they might want to live themselves. And I think, you know, clearly during lockdown, during COVID-19, I think people have had a huge amount of time to reassess their living environment. There's nothing like being, you know, trapped in your own home to get you to assess its merits or otherwise. And it's been so interesting for us to watch how many people have visited our website on a casual basis and, of course, signed up to our Instagram as well, just to see what's happening and to reassess their own lives and whether that's to move elsewhere or whether it's to change things up in terms of their own interior. People just, I think they find inspiration in the houses that we feature, which is really exciting for us. That's what we want people to do. We want people to come to the modern house, not only to transact very, very simply, but also to learn about how you can use design to positively affect change in your own home.
I think you're very right when you mention, you know, that people that go to your website or perhaps they will buy your magazine, they're not necessarily, you know, going to buy a house, but, you know, they are getting inspired. I believe I read somewhere that, for example, you have a lot of kind of young people that actually enjoy going to the modern house. And of course, not all of them are able to afford a house these days. But, you know, I think it does, you know, it does count a little bit for inspiration as well, right?
It's really important that, you know, believe it or not, I mean, we want people to actively seek out the modern house who have absolutely no interest in buying or selling a flat or a house. That's absolutely fine by us. There is definitely an educational aspect to what we do. Again, if you're an editor, if you're a magazine person, you just love the idea of inspiring people. Great photography, well-written content. That is really exciting to us. And you're right, I think we've captured a new generation of design literate youngsters who just love to see what people are doing. The amazing thing about the modern house has always been amazing. This is that we get to see what's happening, you know, in the design world as it happens. We've got a front row seat, and you know, we can see these projects taking shape. We often get called into projects before they've completed, so we can see what materials people are using, the forms they're using, and the way they're choosing to live. And that's really exciting. I think people recognize that.
Matt, a question. I mean, as you know, from what I can see, you know, the modern house is doing so well. Are you having to live with a different kind of pressure as well? I mean, a lot of people wanting, you know, to sell their houses, because I know you guys price quality a lot. I mean, as you can see, no matter, you know, the size of the house, you know, there is a reason why the house is there. I mean, I presume you have to say no quite a lot, right?
We do, and it's a bit of a perverse element to our business model, but we do have to turn things away. We have to turn work away, which sounds counterintuitive, but again, it comes back to that point about being selective and editing. And unless we have a point of view, then it just becomes another generic thing. So unfortunately, yes, we currently turn away roughly half, 40 to 50% it is, of the homes that are offered to us to sell. And that's not us being snooty about it, because it's nothing to do with price point or location. It just all comes down to whether we think on an aesthetic level it will resonate with our buying audience. That's a very simple decision that we're making. So a lot of people don't understand that at all, and a lot of people take that very personally, and I understand that, but it's not personal at all. It's the fact that we want to do a good job for people, and we'll take something on the sales side if we think we can sell it. And the way that we're judging that really is whether we think it's going to appeal to our specific audience.
Well, absolutely. And Matt, I mean, who is your audience? I mean, we're talking, you know, there's a lot of young people, you know, checking out your website, but are there a lot of people that are outside of the UK as well? I was wondering, and if were any plans for international expansion as well?
There are huge numbers of people from outside the UK. I think that it's become very clear to us that Australians, Americans, Northern Europeans have grown up with a certain amount of design in their lives. They've grown up with the idea of being connected between inside and outside spaces. And I think they're just probably a bit more tuned into modern design than maybe traditionally we have been in the UK. Now that's changed a lot in the last few years, I think, but over the years we have sold so many houses to people from abroad, it's really interesting. But I do think that the UK's caught up, and perhaps, you know, part of the reason for the modern house now really, you know, gaining such a foothold, perhaps beyond what was seen as a niche and maybe a bit more of a wider mainstream audience, is because I think that in that public consciousness, people understand now, I think, the value of design in a way that they didn't before. In terms of our own expansion and whether we want to go internationally, the answer to that is, at the moment, we've got a huge amount to be getting on with here. You know, we grew by 40% odd last year. We ultimately can't, you know, even service some of the work that we're getting and having to turn people away. And I think that's an amazingly great problem to have. But we want to see really where we can get to in the UK first, and then see where things take us from there.
That was Matt Gibbard from The Modern House. The first issue of their magazine is out now. That's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, Nora Hall. And if you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando, at fp@monaco.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time with plenty of new interviews for you. And I'm sure in 2021, we're going to see new magazines and old favorites as well being here on the stack. You can listen to the show again on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Before we go, a little song for you. ABBA, Happy New Year. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.